What kind of practice are you doing?
Breath meditation. Breath meditation.
And you? Yeah. Yes.
The same.
Okay. All of you are doing breath meditation? Mm-hmm. Are you following the instructions given in the suttas about the breath meditation?
As best I can.
And that means that you tranquilize on the in-breath and you tranquilize on the out-breath? Good. When Hugh came, I asked him to change his meditation, because actually what had happened is he developed some habits that weren't as good as it could be. His meditation wasn't progressing like he wanted it to. So I had him change over to loving-kindness meditation for a couple of reasons. The first reason being it's a completely different kind of meditation than he was used to, so his old habits didn't count anymore. And your progress in meditation is much faster with loving-kindness meditation than it is with any other kind of meditation that you can do. I mean, much faster by, two or three times faster. Now, a lot of people have an idea that when you do loving-kindness meditation that you're not following what the Buddha taught in meditation and you're not practicing Vipassana meditation. And that's not true. Loving-kindness meditation and the Brahma-viharas is mentioned well over 100 times in the suttas. Mindfulness of breathing is mentioned 8 times. Which do you think he taught most? Now, when you practice loving-kindness meditation, you're actually starting at the beginning of the Brahma-viharas. And it's real interesting because the Brahma-viharas will take you very deep into your meditation. And it gives you a different kind of understanding than you would get with any other kind of meditation. The mindfulness of breathing meditation is more of an intellectual kind of meditation. And the loving-kindness meditation is more a feeling meditation. When you practice loving-kindness, you start by remembering a time when you were happy and you have that warm, glowy feeling. And then you make a wish. Now, the mistake that almost everybody makes when they're teaching loving-kindness is that they want you to make, like it says in the Visuddhimagga, you have to make 4 wishes. May I be happy, may I be free from mental suffering, may I be free from physical suffering, may I be well, happy, and peaceful. Those are the 4 wishes you have to make. But actually, that's very dry. And you wind up repeating these statements over and over again and not paying attention to your meditation. So, what happens is the kind of meditation you wind up doing is a one-pointed absorption kind of concentration, which leads away from what the Buddha was talking about. I'll explain that in a bit. But when you're making a wish for your happiness or someone else's happiness, you want to feel the wish. You wish somebody, if they're going through a very confusing, uncentered period of time, then You make a wish for their mind to be clear, but you know what it feels like to have a clear mind? Then you take that feeling and you put it in your heart and radiate that feeling to your friend. Or if they're going through a very agitated period of time, you make a wish for their peace and calm. You know what it feels like to be peaceful and calm? Bring that feeling into your heart. You can't give something, somebody something that you don't have yourself. It really makes a big difference. The more you can make a wish and radiate that wish, the more effect you have on the person you're sending it to. The more helpful you are towards that person. And you're developing your own mind at the same time. When you take your spiritual friend, that's somebody of the same sex, that you respect and like very much, and put them in your heart, then you surround them with this feeling. And you radiate that feeling. Give them a heart hug. The more you can do that, the quieter your mind becomes, the longer you start staying with your object of meditation. And the less distractions there are. Distractions, hindrances. Hindrances are not your enemy to fight with or control or to do anything with. When a hindrance arises, what you need to do is allow the space for that hindrance to be there without any resistance in your mind or in your body. So when a hindrance arises, let's say you have a physical sensation arise. Your knee hurts, your back hurts, the tailbone hurts, wherever. A sensation arises. What does your mind do when that first arises? What happens is you first start thinking about the feeling. Why is it there? Why didn't it? Oh, I wish it would go away. It always happens when I sit for a certain period of time. I always get this. Every thought about that feeling makes the feeling bigger and more intense. So the first thing you have to learn to do is let the thoughts about the feeling go. How do you let the thoughts go? By not keeping your attention on them. And then you relax the tension or tightness caused by those thoughts. The tension and tightness arises in your head, in your brain. I happen to have one right here. Now, you have two lobes, right? There's a membrane that goes around each one. Every time there's a thought, it contracts. Every time there's a disturbance, it contracts. When you relax, you feel open. You feel an expansion. And what you notice is, right after you do that, there is no thoughts. There's only this mind that's very alert, very clear, and pure. Why? Because you have just let go of craving. Craving always manifests as tension and tightness in your mind and in your body. Westerners like to think of their body being from the neck down. but actually it's from the head down. And this is where the tightness is most easily recognized. Every thought causes tension and tightness to arise in your mind and in your body. When you intentionally relax that, you feel expansion and clarity. Next, what you'll notice is there is a tight mental fist wrapped around that sensation. An itch, want to cough, whatever it happens to be. A pain somewhere or other. The truth is, when the sensation arises, it is there. That's the truth. That's the Dhamma. When it arises, it's there. That's profound, isn't it? What you do with what arises in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. If you resist that sensation, if you try to make that sensation different than it is, if you try to change it in any slight way, you can look forward to that sensation getting bigger and more intense. Until you can't stand it and you have to do something about it. But when you allow the space for that sensation to be there, it's okay for that sensation to be there. It has to be okay because that's the truth. It's there. When you allow the space for that sensation to be there, then you'll notice that you can relax into that and your mind becomes clear. Now, I teach everybody to smile. And I teach them to smile for a very good reason. Because when you smile, your mind is more uplifted, more alert. You have joy arise much more easily. And joy is one of the enlightenment factors, so it's a necessary part of the practice. When you relax and then you smile, you're bringing up a wholesome object. Now you take that smile and you bring it back to your object of meditation. And you keep repeating this over and over again, staying with your object of meditation. Now, what I just talked to you about was right effort. An unwholesome state arose, that sensation. You allow the space for that sensation to be, and you relax. You bring up a wholesome object, smile, and come back to your object of meditation, and you continue on with your object of meditation. One of the things that can happen if you don't have the relaxed step is that you start trying a little bit too hard, and you wind up giving yourself somewhat of a headache. Anyone that is giving themselves a headache is trying too hard and trying to control what's happening in the present moment. Instead of allowing it to be, there is the I want it to be the way I want it to be. Anytime there's identification with thoughts and feelings, that is the source of suffering. The more you can relax into these thoughts and feelings, allowing them to be, but not feeding them with your attention, the easier it is to let go of these disturbances. Now, because loving kindness is a feeling meditation, don't point your feet at me, please. Well, I just told her, so she does know.
That's a monk thing. Okay. Sorry about that.
One of the things about practicing loving kindness meditation, because it is a feeling meditation, you become very sensitive to feeling when it rises. And you can see mind starting to grab on to it, and it's much easier to recognize it and let it be. Relax into that. Now, a lot of you are practicing mindfulness of breathing. Every time there's a distraction, you have to allow that distraction to be there. Relax into that before coming back to your object of meditation. That's the breath and relaxing. Not over-focusing on the breath. The breath is the reminder to relax. If you don't relax the distraction, when you come back to your object of meditation, you're bringing craving back into your object of meditation, and it takes a lot longer to let go of that craving. It's a lot more work, it's harder. When you're practicing loving-kindness meditation, you also have to relax. But it's much easier to recognize because you're teaching yourself to recognize the feelings. And you become much more sensitive to feeling. And you start recognizing when a tightness or tension starts to arise, and then you can let it be without getting distracted away from your object of meditation. The whole point of meditation is not to gain deep concentration. It's not to gain some kind of spiritual, mystical, magical experience. The whole point of meditation is to learn. Learn what? Learn how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. What's your definition of mindfulness? I want an answer. What's your definition of mindfulness?
Keeping something in mind.
Keeping something in mind. Another?
Being completely aware.
Of what?
Of everything that's everything, yourself and your environment.
Okay. Another? You can on this side of the room. You can't answer. I already know the answer.
She can.
Being in the moment.
Being in the moment. I'll give you a definition of mindfulness. Mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. So being aware is kind of like that, but it's such a general term that it's confusing. And how many times do you hear somebody, if you ask them what mindfulness is, they'll tell you it means to be mindful. I spend a lot of time when I give a retreat in giving definitions so that you understand simple terms, like, what is delusion? It means being deluded, right? No, what does it mean? Delusion means taking whatever arises personally. It is where your mind grabs onto it and says, this is me, this is mine. That's a deluded mind. When you let go of delusion, you start seeing things in an impersonal way. You're starting to see things as part of a process instead of this being me, this is mine, this is who I am. Anytime you take something personally, your mind is deluded at that time. Okay? Simple word. Wisdom. What's that mean? Everybody's got to be wise. What does wisdom mean? We sure aren't very talkative tonight, are we? Wisdom means being able to see and understand how dependent origination works. When you develop your wisdom, you are seeing for yourself firsthand how dependent origination works. So you see, there's a lot of words that everybody's supposed to know what it means, but the Buddha had very specific definitions. He didn't have general definitions. These are very specific. When a feeling arises in your body, it's either pleasant, or it's painful, or it's neither painful nor pleasant. That's what feeling is. It doesn't have anything to do with emotion. It's feeling is just a feeling. Right after a feeling arises, craving arises. What is craving? It always manifests as tension and tightness in your mind and in your body. Craving is the I like it, I don't like it mind. If it's a pleasant feeling, I like it. If it's a painful feeling, I don't like it. It squeezes just as tight either way. But that's the start of the personality belief at craving. Right after that, the clinging arises, and that's all your concepts, your opinions, your ideas, and the story about why you like or dislike that feeling. And then your habitual tendency kicks in. Every time this kind of feeling arises, I always think that. I always act that way. And then you have the birth of action. And then you have sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. What did I just tell you? I just told you exactly how dependent origination works. Now, the beauty of the hindrances is that that's where your deluded mind is. Every time a hindrance arises, guess who's identifying with it? Who doesn't like it? Who wants it to be different than it is? Who wants to control it? I do. Now, every time you let a hindrance be and relax that tension and tightness caused by the distraction, and come back to your object of meditation after starting to smile. Every time you do that, you are experiencing the cessation of suffering. That's the third noble truth. You get to experience the third noble truth many thousands, many hundreds of thousands of times before enlightenment occurs. Some people even say millions, but depends on the person, right? The thing with the hindrance is that it is there to teach you where your attachment is. It is there to show you that, hey, there's a wrong belief in this, and it's always, I am that. Now, when you're practicing loving kindness meditation, you get attacked by the hindrances just like any other kind of meditation. But when you're practicing loving kindness meditation, I'm telling people continually on retreat, you got to smile. I don't want you sitting without smiling. I don't want you walking around without smiling. And she's got one of the most sour faces going. Why don't you smile? I'm telling you right now. Okay, smile. Look at how it makes your mind feel. Your mind is alert. Your mind is much more aware of what's happening in the present moment because of that smile. You want to improve your mindfulness? You want to know what mindfulness really, truly is? Don't sit in meditation for a week. All you got to do is, from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed, is smile. And everything, all the time, your mindfulness will get so incredibly sharp, and your understanding will deepen so fast that you'll be amazed. And look at how you're affecting the world around you when you smile. Makes sense, doesn't it? Now, there are going to be times during that week when you're not going to feel like smiling. I don't care. Smile anyway. Even a fake smile has its advantages. You go through an emotional period where you're angry at somebody or disappointed or you're frustrated or whatever. If you smile into that, your mind looks at you and says, no, I'm mad, I'm not happy. But then your mind keeps looking at you smiling and going, well, maybe I'm supposed to be happy. So then I will be. And you can let go of your attachment very quickly that way. What is attachment? I am that. I am those thoughts, I am those feelings, I'm angry at this person or that person, whatever. Now, the other part of this is you got to learn to laugh at how crazy your mind is. Welcome to the human race. We all crazy. Every time we take something personally, we are crazy at that moment. I'm mad. I'm frustrated. I'm sad. Your mind is really causing a lot of pain and suffering. When you develop the ability to recognize when you are really caught and start to laugh with it, you're not caught anymore. You go from, I'm mad, I'm sad, I'm angry, to, well, it's only this. It's only this anger. It's only this sadness. What's that? I don't need to hold on to that. And that's actually what happens in your mind. So what are you doing by learning to smile? You're developing right effort. You're developing your mindfulness in your daily life. Too many times people think that meditation is about sitting like a Buddha image here without moving. That's meditation. No. That's part of meditation. How about the other 95% of the day? When you're not sitting very still, Does that mean you don't have to meditate at that time? Not hardly. It means you've got to be meditating all the time. Watch what your mind is doing. What's the easiest way to get to see what your mind is doing? Smile. It works, doesn't it? It really does work. And you'll get to a place where your mind is so serious, I don't want to smile. This is serious stuff. I've had some students actually get angry at me because I told them they needed to smile. I can't smile about this. And you know what my reaction is? Laugh. That's one of the most funny things I've ever run across. Look at how attached you are to this stuff. Look at how you're taking all this stuff personally and causing yourself immeasurable pain. You don't need to do that to yourself. You can laugh and you can smile and you can be happy or not. Your choice. And you're the only one that can choose that for you. One of the things that I truly love about Buddhism is the self-responsibility. I had a student not too long ago that started blaming all external things for their pain. I wrote back to him and I said, "Well, you're really good at complaining, but when are you going to start taking responsibility for yourself instead of blaming external things for your happiness? When are you going to wake up to the fact that you can take it personally, you can take it seriously, and you can make yourself suffer like anything, or not? When are you going to be responsible for yourself? You can't blame outside influences for your happiness. Yeah, we go through ups and downs. So? See, one of the things that was a major thing that Hugh learned was the equanimity, the balance of mind. And he was absolutely shocked by it. Well, you can have all this stuff happen. Some of it's real positive and real uplifting, and some of it's not. It's okay either way. How are you going to learn your lessons if you're going to be completely controlled by your emotions? And your emotions have how much craving in them and how much concepts? You know, we think in concepts. What is this? Well, that's a cup. Where is the cup? Is it the glaze? Is it the color? Is it the handle? Where is the cup? Cup is a concept. It's made up of a lot of different little things to make this concept up. Everything that we think about is in concepts. What the Buddha was trying to get us to do was not recognize things. That has memory in it. That's perception. Perception is the thing that brings concepts up because that's the naming part of your mind. He was trying to get us to cognize things. In other words, see them as they arise before they're named. If naming gets involved with these things, then that's one step further away from being in the present moment. And old habits are hard to let go of. Granted. You always think and see things in the same way. and you're used to it. Well, when you cognize something, that means you see it in the present moment. Your mindfulness is exceptionally sharp. When you have developed the ability of seeing when something comes up, when you develop the ability to recognize when contact arises. Contact is, you have a good working eye, there's color and form. The good working eye hits the color and form, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of these three things is called eye contact. When you're able to see eye contact, you will see a feeling arise. The feeling is going to be pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. If you relax right then, you are going to see what you're looking at without any distraction at all. What is a distraction? Craving. Clinging. That's your conceptual thinking about things, your opinions, your ideas, and your identification. This is me who's doing this. This is mine. And then your habitual tendency starts kicking in. Every time I see something like that, I always act this way. And then you have your birth of action and the sorrow and lamentation and all the rest. When you're able to cognize things, that means that you're seeing before the craving arises. And when you see what happens before the craving, and you let go of the craving, you see it completely without being distracted by it. Now, for instance, you wouldn't distinguish the colors because that's into your perception. You would see the form, you would allow that feeling to arise. It's a pretty form, okay, and you relax into it. Now, if you don't, then your mind contracts and then you start thinking about how you like this. Oh, these colors are really beautiful. I've always liked colors like that. Now, are you in the present moment when you're thinking about this? No. You're removed from the present moment, and what happens in your mind is you start thinking, well, you know, I used to have a cup like this. I really liked it. Oh, I remember I had a friend that had some cups like this. It was great. And all of a sudden, you're 1,000 miles away. You're not in the present moment at all anymore. It's really interesting when people come and do well on the retreat that they go out into the desert or they go home and they start noticing things being brighter, being clearer, because they haven't got the clouding, thinking, conceptual mind arising so much anymore. And as a result, you wind up truly enjoying seeing something or listening to something. You do it completely because you haven't got any distraction comparing this, doing that, taking your mind all the way away, and then coming back occasionally and going, oh, I like this music. Yeah, I heard that once before, and blah, 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 blah. You see what happens? So when you get into the present moment, you completely are with the present moment. You can enjoy the present moment. There's nothing wrong with enjoying things. But when that present moment changes to something else, then you're with that completely. There's no attachment because there's no craving. So that's what smiling all the time does for you. It makes you more and more alert, more and more clear when a feeling arises. Now, one of the psychological testing, there's all kinds of stuff that's happening now on the internet. They're talking about smiling and the advantages and how laughing changes your hormones and makes you happy and makes you healthy and does it, people overcome all kinds of diseases. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things that they're writing about a lot. But the corners of your mouth, when they go up, so does your mental state. Now, what do I talk about with smiling? I'm talking about smiling with your mind. Most important, smiling with your eyes. Let the smile come through. That makes it more genuine. A little smile on your lips, it doesn't have to be a big toothy grin. Although sometimes you're having so much fun, it turns into that. But also smiling in your heart. The thing with meditation is there's not just sitting. Okay? The Buddha said that meditation, it's three different things. Practicing your generosity. How do you practice your generosity? You got a smile? Give it away. You have kind thoughts for somebody else? Tell them. Think kind thoughts. Act in ways that make other people happy. And do it all the time. Not just once in a while. You know, right now the economy's, everything's really crazy, and there's all these people that are so much into their fear and all their anxiety. They have such a limited view of the universe that they're afraid of losing material things. You want to be prosperous? You practice your generosity all the time. Not just once in a while. Practice your generosity, saying things that make other people let go of their fear. Bring them into the present moment. You get what you give. So, you want to be happy? You want to be prosperous? Then give it away. Can't hold on to this stuff. You got to give it away. The more you can give away your smile, the more you affect the world around you in a positive way. The more you get caught up in your fear and anxiety of, oh my God, what's going to happen next? What are you practicing at that time? What are you giving away at that time? See, it happens in a negative way as well as a positive way. We're all giving one way or another. But you give your dissatisfaction, your dislike, your criticism, your hatred, well, guess what you're going to get back? Because that's what you're giving. You start changing that, and you start giving your smile, and you start saying things that make other people happy. And you start doing things that make other people happy, and you think kindly of other people. Guess what you're going to get back? Doesn't that make you prosperous? More than a little bit. The universe wants to give you what you want. But you got to practice in the right way to get it. The next part of the meditation is taking and keeping your precepts. Can't be understated. the precepts, breaking the precepts, are why you have hindrances arise. Why is that? Because when you break a precept, it causes a guilty mind to arise, and guess who's identifying with that guilty mind? Guess who's taking it personally? Guess who's not being mindful in the present moment? You don't kill living beings on purpose. Doesn't mean you can't eat meat, but you are not physically killing anything. You don't have the intention to kill. You don't take anything that's not given. You don't have any wrong sexual activity. Wrong sexual activity? Sexual activity with another person's mate, or sexual activity with not with your mate. How about that? I think that's better. Not having sexual activity with somebody that's too young, still under the care of their parents or guardians. Not having sexual activity by paying for it with prostitutes. It's pretty easy. During the time of the Buddha, there was a lot of kings around. They had more than one wife, and that was okay because the laws of the land you have to follow. And that's basically what he said. You don't tell lies, even little white lies. It's better not to say anything than it is to say a white lie. You don't curse. And this is one of the shockers of this culture, is cursing is becoming so popular that it's starting to wind its way into everybody's speech. And it is coarse and it is hurtful. It's not pleasant to the ear to somebody saying the F words all the time, or we have a dog that we call her the F word all the time. It's called food eater. So we call her food. That's one of the four letter F words. It's okay. She's just like a vacuum cleaner.
It's got thyroid condition.
And that's an external excuse. But using your speech in a way that brings people together, that doesn't divide people, that's harmonious, that people, when they hear what you have to say, they want to go, you know, that was really good. I wanted everyone to write that down. That's good stuff. And don't gossip. What is gossip? Gossip is sitting around talking about somebody else that's not there and making up these outrageous stories about them that aren't true and saying it like it is true. I have some relatives that are absolutely brilliant at it. It bores me to tears listening to them talk because I know everything they're saying is just wind going, hitting the ear. Not taking any drugs or alcohol. Oh, but I like to have a wine now and then. We went through this on the retreat. There was one lady that she insisted that every now and then I'm going to drink wine. I don't care. She did the retreat the year before. Her meditation was very good. She kept drinking the wine, knowing she was breaking the precept. She came to the retreat, and the first part of her retreat was absolutely horrid. Well, it's not such a big deal, breaking this precept. Yeah, it is. You want to have a good retreat? You want to have good progress in your spiritual life? You know what the rules are. If you break them, you feel guilty. Well, it's only a little thing. There's no such a thing as a little thing. It will affect your meditation negatively. In Malaysia, there was some people that they really liked to do their wine, and oh, occasional beer every now and then, and every time I saw them, they had a beer in their hand. And they wanted to learn meditation, and they had an absolutely terrible time. All of these hindrances coming up, my mind just doesn't calm down. I said, stop drinking. Oh, but that doesn't matter. Yeah, it does. It dulls your mind. It makes the hindrances arise, and then you have to work through that to purify yourself until the hindrances stop coming up so much. Only then are you able to progress in your meditation. I know it's real popular. Have wine with a meal or getting ready to go out or whatever. But it's not worth it. If you keep these five precepts without breaking them, your progress in the meditation will be so fast that it will blow your mind. I can give you an example. There was a lady then in Malaysia that she would not break a precept for any reason at all. She was really nice. She was fun to be around because she was such an uplifted person. And she came to me and she said, I think I want to learn how to meditate. So there's a meditation retreat coming up on the weekend, and the first day I gave her the instructions. After lunch, I came around and said, well, how's your meditation going? She says, it seems to be going pretty good. How long are you sitting? I can only sit for about 45 minutes. Only. Why don't you sit longer? Well, you know, I'm not used to sitting on the floor, and it's killing my legs, and that's as long as I can last. So I said, well, then don't sit on the floor. There's no magic in the floor. Sit in a chair. Sit with your back nicely straight. Her next sitting was 4 hours. She got into the first jhana, the first day of her retreat. Why did that happen? Because she wouldn't consider breaking a precept. That's how you get fast progress. It really works. And that's one of the things the Buddha says. Keeping your precepts as closely as you possibly can. Makes your mind clear. Your mind becomes tranquil very quickly when you do that. And I also had this clown in Malaysia that said, okay, you've convinced me. How long do I have to do this? I said, well, we'll start at 100 years and go up from there. So keeping the precepts, what it really does is it makes you more and more aware of what you're going to do before you do it. And if you see that that's going to lead to your suffering and pain, then don't do it. It's a way to improve your general mindfulness. How long am I supposed to talk?
Do we have a time on this, or is there a time schedule that we're keeping?
Usually we end at 9 at the latest, 8 o'clock.
It's 8 o'clock.
Oh,
okay.
Well, I got a long time to go.
Now we've done it.
See, my training as a monk happened really in, well, it was 1995, when I was invited to a huge monastery in Malaysia. It was the biggest Theravada monastery in all Malaysia. It was in Kuala Lumpur. And the head monk was Sri Lankan, and he was used to giving an hour and a half or 2 hour talk every Friday night. He's getting old. He asked me to come, and he said, every other week, I want you to give a talk. And I said, well, okay, I can do that. I was real good at preparing talks and that sort of thing at the time. But he started at the first day of the range retreat. There's like, oh, there must have been 1,500 people there. And he started talking about my spending the range retreat there and how happy he was. Then he turns to me and he said, why don't you give the talk? An hour and a half will do. And I hadn't prepared anything. It had to be freelance hour and a half. Then I went, okay, I guess I could do that. And I did. But it was really hard. And since then, I got in the habit of doing hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes a little bit longer talks. And I get scolded for doing long talks all the time. Why don't you just do an hour? That's plenty. But there's so much more to talk about. Anyway. One of the things that's really important to understand is we have five aggregates that make up this mind and body process. You have a physical body. You have feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. You have perception, the naming part of your mind. The memory is involved with that. You have thoughts. Now, they also call this sankharas, or formations. But when I start out teaching people, I will say thoughts, because it's more easily understood. When we go deeper in the meditation, we could change over to formations. And you have consciousness. Now, when an unpleasant feeling arises, what we wind up doing naturally is trying to think our feeling. And the more you think you're feeling, the bigger and more intense the feeling becomes. That's why I said, with the instructions in what you do when a sensation arises in your body, the first thing you do is let go of your thoughts about it. If you don't, that feeling will get bigger and more intense. Ask people that do the sweeping meditation and they take their attention and put it right in the middle of that sensation. What happens when that sensation, when you do that? Boy, that gets big. I want to tell you. And your mind goes, I don't like that. But I'm going to stay there and I'm going to grit my teeth and keep with that sensation. That's not the Buddha's teaching. He did not encourage people to grit their teeth and bear it. He encouraged people to softly, openly, lovingly accept what happens in the present moment. See, there's a difference between doing this with your mind and doing that. Which one do you want to practice? Which one do you think is easier? Which one's more fun? I know fun is not a word that people that practice meditation use very much. I do. Because I want your meditation to be fun. If it's not fun, that means you're not very interested in it. And if you're not interested in it, you're not going to see things as clearly as you can. So you make it fun. I mean, think about when you went to college and you had a class that you really liked. Was it fun? Did you mind studying in that class? No, because it was fun. Because it was interesting. Well, the meditation's the same. The more interest and the more fun you can have while you're meditating, the better you do and the more alert your mind becomes. It's not a maybe. This is a for real thing. The Buddha talked about interest a lot and how important it is. When you make learning fun, then you get so excited that you want to go sit. How many times have you had that happen? You know? I don't want to talk now. I got to go sit. This stuff is great. And that happens when you practice with this relaxed step, with this step of letting go of the craving. Why? Because you're teaching yourself exactly how dependent origination works. That's where your insights are. That's where your oh wows get really strong. Oh wow, I never looked at it like that before. I never really paid that close of attention. When the Buddha was talking about insight, he was always mentioning it with serenity. Serenity, samatha in Pali. Samatha practice means tranquility practice. It means being in the jhanas. Now, he said that insight and tranquility need to be evenly yoked together. If the tranquility is too strong, then think about a couple of oxen that are yoked together and one of them is a lot more enthusiastic and strong than the other one. What happens when one of them gets too strong? Start going in circles. And it happens the other way too. Start going in circles. If you want to go on the straight line, they have to be evenly balanced. They have to be pulling the weight in the same way. So your insights and your tranquility grow together when you start recognizing how the process of dependent origination works. And the thing that's really amazing is there are a lot of teachers that start talking about dependent origination, always prefacing it by saying, this is hard to understand. You know, this is deep. This is not any simple thing. And they try to explain it in such a way that it's really hard to understand and it's so deep that you don't know what they're talking about. But it's simple. As long as the Buddha said, if you want to understand dependent origination, you have to give ear. You have to listen. You're not going to be able to figure it out by yourself. But when you start listening to Dhamma talks with people that really do understand dependent origination and can talk about it in practical ways, then your mind starts going, oh, yeah, I've seen that. Now I can recognize it. Hey, this is fun. This is good stuff. And as you go deeper, because of your giving ear and listening, your understanding and your wisdom grow so fast. It really makes the meditation exciting. And you don't hear that being described that way very often. You don't hear about, my meditation is so great, I don't want to talk to you, I want to go sit. This stuff is so interesting, it just blows my mind. That happens on retreat. Doesn't it? It's fun to learn. And that's the essence of the Buddha's practice. I had a friend in Malaysia, he came up to me and he said, you know, I've been practicing the same chant for 7 years. You want me to chant it for you? I said, sure. And I listened to it. So he chanted for 15 or 20 minutes and he got done and I said, hey, that was nice. What does it mean? And he went, mean? Yeah. You've been doing the same thing over and over for 7 years. You must know what the meaning is. He said, oh, no, no, no. It's the sound that's important and the feeling coming from that. And I said, I can give you a sound and a feeling. All you have to do is repeat banana over and over again. At least you know what a banana is. Don't do something if you don't understand what you're doing. Don't follow anything blindly because everybody else says you're supposed to do it. Try it for yourself, see whether it's right or not. A question I ask almost everybody that comes for a retreat is, do you think you're on the right path? When they're doing the relaxed step and they're smiling, they always say, yes, I really feel like this is the one. I had a friend come for the last retreat that he's meditated a lot longer than I have. I've been doing it for 35 years. And he's been doing it for over 40. But he's been doing all different kinds of meditations and that sort of thing. He's kind of played the feel, as it were. So I gave him the loving kindness meditation, and he was having a very difficult time with it. And after about the third day, I said, you know, it's just not right for you doing the loving kindness meditation. I want you to switch over and start doing mindfulness of breathing. He got this big sigh of relief. Okay. Went his first sitting, he got into the first jhana. Next day, he comes for the interview. He'd already gotten in the fourth jhana. That's pretty amazing stuff. He was understanding what he was doing. And now everything just started coming together. Now he'd done all of these other practices before. It's not that it's a waste of time to do another practice. It's not, ever. But when you add this relaxed step and the smiling into your meditation, it changes the meditation and you start going deep and you start understanding. And all of the 40 or 45 years of practice that he's been doing of hearing this part of the Dhamma and that part of the Dhamma and that part of the Dhamma, now it all went, oh, this is all interconnected. This is all amazing. I'm understanding this stuff now just by adding those two extra things. Smiling, and relaxing. Yes.
Do you think that we might try some meditation here?
Well, we can if you want. It's up to you. I gave a talk last night at
UUC, Unitarian Universalist Church.
And one of the ladies went home, and she was so inspired about smiling and relaxing, she'd been practicing Zen. And she added the smile and relax step to it, and she said, I never felt so good before. And she went to sleep, and she slept really soundly.
She
got up happy, and she said, well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try smiling all day. She sat again, and all of a sudden, the meditation was making sense. The rigidity of the Zen practice started disappearing for her. And we got a chance to talk to her and see how she was doing, and she was really happy. That's the whole point of doing the meditation, learning, being content, being at ease, so that your observation power becomes stronger and you start seeing more and more little things that you'd never seen before. And that means that you're learning. Yeah.
I'm curious about loving kindness meditation, and I think I understand the first step is to have your spirit friend.
Yeah.
Embracing your spirit friend, and would my spirit friend be the focus of my meditation for the full meditation, or do
yes.
I?
Yes, your spiritual friend, you stay with the same one all the time. Now, this is during...
But throughout, you know, if I have an hour of sit, then I'm continually focused on...
That's right. Now, you have to understand that this is a training process. And after you get to a certain depth in your meditation, I will change it so that you start radiating to other different kinds of beings, and then eventually towards all beings.
And that can happen in a series of a retreat over 2 weeks. People can go through the whole entire barrier system. Okay, but like when you trained me, I was doing a lot of things and training. I was with the same spiritual friend for a year, and then I started moving through. But it's a building up of process.
Well, that's just the training
and
period.
And going through each one of them fully and completely. So it's different.
So one thing I wanted to add is sometimes when the mind wanders and you come back to the loving kindness, you sometimes have to generate that loving kindness for yourself again, get that going again before you then start to come back to your spiritual friend. So that's just part of the natural process of that particular practice. The concentration is staying on that person, but sometimes the mind doesn't do that. And then it gets important that when you come back, you get that going again when you come back to that person.
Right, it's like you said, the first step is to take your friend and do that. Okay, the first step really is to build it up in your heart and get it really going, and then take your friend and, or send it to yourself first, and then bring your friend and give them a heart hug and start working with your friend. So there's like these three things that are going on to start.
And if you have trouble bringing that feeling of loving kindness back, you're not smiling. It's just that simple. How many times have I said that somebody comes, I just can't feel this, you're not smiling enough. That's all there is to it. The more you smile, the easier it is to radiate that kind, loving feeling. Yeah?
You don't have to stick with one spiritual friend. You can
No, same spiritual friend all the time.
But if you I have children, I want to rotate.
I don't want you to do your children. I want you to do a spiritual friend.
Those
a spiritual friend is someone of the same sex, and they are alive, but not a family member to start off with. Why? One of the children, you're going to go sit in meditation and may do something you don't like. How much loving kindness do you spend with them at that time? Or how much do you spend with your loving dissatisfaction? See, so you don't want anybody too close to start off with. You want them to be a real friend.
So it's someone of my same gender?
Yeah.
That's alive, that I know?
Yeah.
And why is it the same? Why does it necessarily happen?
Because lust comes up and infatuation happens and it causes all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, it's easier to send loving and kind thoughts to a nun than it would be to a friend. Because a nun, if they're developing their mind correctly, they are very kind and gentle, and it's very easy to respect them. I'm not giving her a plug. There are other nuns around.
I was thinking, wow, that's cool. I'm going to feel great this week.
And when she gets that way, then you can start sending love and kindness. I'm only teasing, honest. That just put her down, yeah. off her ego trip there.
I came down again.
But in Asia, that it's very easy because there are a lot of nuns, and they are very, very easy to appreciate their good qualities. But if you can't think of one, then pick a friend, but make that friend someone that you truly respect and really do wish them well. And stay with that same person all of the time. You'll get to your kids eventually, but only after you've gained a degree of equanimity. So this is a training period that it's not going to last forever. Sometimes when people come and they start practicing loving-kindness meditation, sometimes it might take 4 or 5 days before they start changing things. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. Sometimes it's a little bit less. It just depends on the individual and how well they follow the directions. And you understand these are not my directions. These are directions from the Buddha. He showed us exactly how to meditate. What I do when I give a Dhamma talk is I wind up reading the sutta to you. So you know it's not coming from me. I might explain something here or there, but you know that this is what the Buddha was saying. He's the teacher. I'm not a teacher. I'm a guide. If you start going off the path, I can say, been there, done that, try this one. Okay? So you want to sit for 15 minutes? How's that? Okay. When I give a retreat, there's a lot of people that start sitting on the floor, and after a while, just about everybody is sitting in a chair. There's no magic in the floor. The reason that everybody sits on the floor is because in Asia, they didn't have any chairs. They grew up sitting on the floor. And when you grow up sitting on the floor, it changes your hips a little bit, so it's really comfortable to sit on the floor. Well, guess what? How many people here have been sitting on the floor since they were a little tiny kid. No. You're used to sitting in a chair. That's fine. Sit in a chair. If you're comfortable sitting on the floor, that's fine. Sit on the floor. There's no magic in either one. The magic comes in the mind. Okay. When you sit, you see how you're sitting here? You're sitting with your shoulders forward, and that closes your heart. You want to sit with your chest up and your back nicely straight. And that starts to open up your heart a little bit more.
So, Alice, if you want, we can get a chair.
And for an awful lot of people that sit on the floor, they sit on a pillow so that they have an angle like that. It's a lot more comfortable.
I think this is your first time, right?
Yeah.
Ever sitting.
Yeah.
But don't move your body when we start. Pick your spiritual friend. Remember a time when you're really happy. And that happy feeling is a glowing feeling in the center of your chest. When that feeling arises, then you make a wish for your own happiness. Any wish you make, you want to be able to feel that wish. When you feel that wish, put that feeling in the center of your heart and radiate that feeling to yourself. It doesn't matter how many times your mind gets distracted. Thoughts are not your enemy to try to crush or stop. Notice that your mind is thinking about something and simply let go of the thought. Relax the tension and tightness in your head, in your mind, and gently smile and come back to your radiating loving kindness to yourself and making a wish for your own happiness. If your mind wanders 20 times during the sitting and 20 times you notice that your mind wandered, you let it be, relaxed, came back to your meditation. That is a good meditation. It's active, to be sure, but it is a good meditation. After about 5 minutes of radiating loving kindness to yourself, then you want to start radiating loving kindness to your spiritual friend. Your spiritual friend is someone of the same sex and they are alive. Your spiritual friend is someone that when you think of them and their good qualities, it makes you happy. So you're sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. May I be peaceful and calm. Feel that peace and calm. As I feel this, I wish this feeling for you. May you be peaceful and calm. Put them right in the middle of your heart. Surround your heart with this love. Radiate that feeling to your friend. Please sit with your back nicely straight. With one vertebrae on top of the other. Sit in a relaxed way, but straight. This can cause sensations to arise in your body. Sometimes it's an itch, sometimes it's a cough, sometimes it can be heat or vibration or pain. As soon as you notice your mind is pulled to that sensation, first let go of your thoughts about the sensation and relax. Now let go of that tight mental fist around that sensation and allow that sensation to be there. Now relax. Gently smile and bring that feeling back to your loving kindness meditation. When you're sitting, you want to sit with your eyes closed. The reason you sit with your eyes closed is because any kind of movement at all, even an insect, can cause your mind to start looking at it and then your mind runs away. Don't move your body at all. Don't wiggle your toes, don't wiggle your fingers, don't scratch, don't rub, don't change your posture. Sit nicely straight and at ease. This is a smiling meditation. You want to smile with your mind. Smile with your eyes, even though your eyes are closed. A little smile on your lips and a smile in your heart. Anytime you see you're not smiling, don't criticize yourself. Just start over again and smile some more. Try doing this meditation, I would suggest going to my website. There is instructions that are more detailed than what I just gave. And when you sit, you try to sit for 30 minutes without moving your body for any reason at all. If you're going to sit, you can move as much as he does. You do this because you start recognizing that your mind wants to distract you in one way or another. So it will cause some sensations to arise, and all of a sudden you're doing this and you don't even recognize it. You're not seeing that your mind is having a reaction to what is happening in the present moment instead of a response of seeing that, allowing it to be, and relaxing into that. But when you start sitting, sit for at least 30 minutes. That's not very long. When your sitting is good, sit longer if you have the time. But don't sit for any less than 30 minutes. There's times when 30 minutes seems like it's 4 hours. And there's times when 30 minutes seems like it's less than a minute. It all depends on your calmness at the time and the hindrances that arise. remember that your hindrances are not your enemy to fight with. The hindrance is just a friend coming to let you know where your attachments are. So welcome them like an old friend. I can laugh at that because I know how hard it is. Your attachments can be real amazing sometimes. Everything gets so serious. Anytime you see your mind being serious during the day, your mind is telling you right then, right there, guess who has an attachment here? Guess who's trying to control the universe and make it be the way you want it to be? I am. Me. That's mine. Who's identifying with it? Who's trying to make things be the way you want them to be? Who's causing them self-suffering? And that can be incredibly hilarious when you start developing your sense of humor about how crazy your mind is and how it thinks that this is really important and I gotta pay attention to it and I have to act this way because I'm that. You know, life is supposed to be fun. And any time it's not, we're not doing it right. So, you got any questions? Comments? Statements? Anything? Yeah?
Life is supposed to be, is meant to be fun.
Yeah.
However, there are some great losses that one
does. Oh, sure.
Have
that happens. My mother just died not too long ago. I wasn't feeling much like laughing at the time.
And it's all right, I assume, to allow that sadness.
Of course. You have to allow whatever feeling arises to be there because that's the truth. What do you do with that? If you grab on to the sadness because you've lost somebody very dear and you get into your dislike of the situation and wish it would change and wish it didn't happen, you can look forward to that same feeling coming up over and over again and causing more and more pain. Because whose pain is it? It's mine and I don't like it and I don't want it to be like this. But the truth is, pain is going to be there. Sometimes tears are going to be there. And it's okay. It's all right for all of that to be there because that's the truth. But you relax into that. And you kind of develop that little smile in your mind. Yeah, this is happening and it's okay for it to happen. That way you don't get attached to the dislike. And what happens with quite often when you talk with people in the hospice, people that are really attached and they really fight the death and they really are sad and they really... Every time you see them, they're sad because of that. Well, within a year to 2 years, they're going to have some kind of major physical problem because of that attachment. Now, the truth is, pain arises sometimes, and you have to allow it to be there. But you don't have to allow it from aversion. You allow it from loving acceptance. I've told this story quite a few times. I had a student that she had a boy and a girl. The girl was about 9 years old, the boy was 10. They went out to the beach, just out by San Diego here. and a shark got the little girl. And Mom had to go in and identify the body. She asked me, what are you supposed to do with something like that? I said, you're going to have these feelings and they're going to rip your heart out, and it's okay. Your heart can take it. Allow that pain to be there and love your little girl. Don't try to stop the pain. You can't stop the pain because the pain is the pain. And it's the truth. You can't control the truth. You can only allow the truth. Of course she went in and it was her little girl. She had a lot of tears. She had a lot of sadness. But she allowed it to be. Without trying to make it anything different than what it was. And over a period of time, all the sadness would come up again. And the memories and all of these kind of things were still happening, but she was learning how to allow them to be without trying to push them away or stop them. After another period of time, she started realizing how incredibly important it is to do that with everything that arises. And that became one of her major lessons for life. To allow the present moment to be. And she's turned into a heck of a meditation teacher. She's not in San Diego anymore. She moved to Dallas, I think. I'm not sure where she is now. That was a lot of years ago, so I've kind of lost track. But yeah, there's going to be times when it's painful. Okay, it's painful. That's the truth. It's hard losing a mother. It's hard losing a father. It's hard losing a sibling or a close friend. But the more you can accept what's happening in the present moment without resisting it, without getting into your conceptualizing about it, and thinking about it, and trying to control it, and trying to make it different than it is. I just told you about the five aggregates. You have your thoughts and you have feelings. You can't think your feelings. It don't work. Feelings are one thing and thoughts are something entirely different. Neither will meet. The more you try to think your feeling and control your feeling, or think your feeling and control your feeling with your thoughts, the more you will suffer. That's a promise. That's the way it actually works. So you let go of the feeling, or you let go of the thoughts, and you allow the feeling to be there. There's sadness. That's part of life. There's pain. There's anxiety. There's frustration. There's fear. That's part of life, and it's okay. It has to be okay because it's the truth. The Dhamma is the Dhamma and we can't change it. We can't make it any different than what it is. Of course, we spend an awful lot of energy trying to make it different. But like Mom, this mother that she had to go identify her sweet little child, that was not easy. She lived through it, and she was better for doing that. After a while, the only memories she had of her child were the ones that were very positive. Not the horror, but the goodness. It takes developing that. Not indulging in the dissatisfaction of the present moment, but embracing the present moment for what it is. And if there's tears, there's tears. That's the truth. You let them be. You let them come. Okay? Anything else?
What's your website?
I will give you a card.
Awesome.
I have. I like bringing this out.
He likes to do this.
The link is in our newsletter.
Oh, okay. But it doesn't matter. I still like bringing this out. Somebody gave this to me.
Oh,
and
no.
It makes me feel so fancy, I can't believe it. So, here. One of the little fun things. If I lost this tomorrow, I wouldn't even think about it. But since I got it, why not? It's yes. Kind of fun.
Makes everybody smile. It's great.
I have another question.
Sure.
Why is it improper to show our feet to you?
Pointing your feet is considered a dirty thing. In Asia, in particular, your feet, you're barefoot a lot, you got sandals on, your feet are dirty. And it's considered very bad form to point your feet at somebody else when they're talking. There's a lot of little things that sometimes I'll start giving a Dhamma talk and I'll see somebody do this and then they're doing this. And I'll stop the Dhamma talk and say, don't sit like that.
We try to put that in an orientation.
Because when you sit like this, you only hear about 60% of what's being said. The rest of the time, this is your thinking position, this is your protection. So you don't sit like that when you're hearing the Dhamma. It's not respectful.
Yeah, we thought it would be interesting to put a section on our website about questions about monks. And we really would like you to write me and ask me questions about monks and nuns that you don't understand. Because Americans really don't get taught a very lot about monks and nuns and what's going on. And it's a good topic for me and to dig up the answers. A lot of different abbots, you know, if it's Thai or if it's Burmese or if it's Chinese or if it's Tibetan, there's some differences, you know, with things. But it's been suggested a number of times and we want to expand it this summer because
you can't do that. You have to read all of the Vinaya. You don't get your information. You'll find out about all of the rules that way.
I know
of
about that
which
part.
There are many.
I know about things. That part, but I just mean general things. Like, why doesn't a monk say thank you to you? Do you know why the monk doesn't say thank you? That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Why?
No, let me do that.
He's going to do this.
We don't say thank you because if we say thank you when you give us something, that turns it into a personal gift between two people.
Right.
But I'm a representative of the Buddha and all of the Arahats and all of the Sangha. So when I accept something from you and I can say, well done, this is nice, what I'm doing is I'm allowing you the space to make so much more merit from giving that gift. Now, when you give a gift to a monk, you don't give it to that person as an individual. You give it to them as the representative. And in your mind, you're thinking, this gift goes to all of the Sangha. Okay?
It's So Anne said the right way, didn't she, when she said, you're a field of merit.
I am a field of merit.
When you go in the monastic, you're a field of merit for you, is what it means. You see?
So say nice things to monks. Do nice things to monks. We're a field of merit, so you better watch out.